I'm Rachel Newton.
And I'm Lauren McCall. Welcome to the Heal and Harrow podcast.
The 16th and 17th century Scottish witch trials were one of the darkest periods of Scotland's history. An estimated 2,500 people, mostly women, were executed and many more accused. With Heal and Harrow, we seek to pay a humanising tribute to these women while also exploring historical beliefs in the supernatural and modern-day parallels in our society today.
Our project takes the form of an album and a live show. The music is based on specially commissioned works by celebrated author Mary Kidd, tales inspired by and in remembrance of real women who were persecuted and tried as witches, and characters from the folkloric tales and mythology enshrined in our oral culture. These stories form part of her brilliant book, We Are All Witches.
In this podcast, we discuss the woman who inspired the work, Mary's writing process, and how we went about creating our musical response. We'll also hear excerpts from the stories themselves, read by 10 brilliant women from across Scotland.
Do click the subscribe button to make sure you catch each episode as soon as it's released. And if you would like to rate and review, that would be much appreciated as it really helps us reach more ears. You can find links to purchase our album, Mary's book, and download the story readings in full at healandharrow.com.
This week's episode is Mary, read by Gaelic singer and podcaster Deirdre Graham. And here's Mary to tell us more about it.
So this one is not about a witch at all. This is a story of a Gaelic, they quite often call her a poetess in the old, if you like, poetry textbooks. So a Gaelic banavarsht, a woman poet. And her name was Marianne Ulster Roy, and she lived in the 17th century. She was nursemaid to the children of MacLeod of Dunvegan. But she herself was from Rodal in Harris. Mary Nian Alistair Roy means Mary, daughter of red-haired Alistair Alexander. She's also known as Mary MacLeod. And she's a kind of interesting character. She was, as I say, a nursemaid. That was her official job. And the fact she was a poet and a very, very good poet, we think was controversial. There's a story that she stood on the threshold to compose her songs. This is an oral tradition of poetry. We don't say that poets in Gaelic of that era wrote poetry, they composed it, they made it. So she would stand on the threshold because she wasn't inside with the women. And of course, Gaelic has this huge tradition of anonymous women songs, the walking tradition, the work song tradition more generally. And neither was she outside among the men because the clan poets, who had a big important role, they were propagandists and sort of PR men. They were a little bit like Malcolm Tucker in the thick of it. They were kind of an official thing. You know, they were in this big official political world of men. So Mary said that she would stand on the threshold. And so actually the story begins with a riddle in Gaelic, which means it's not inside and it's not outside, but every house has one. And of course, it's the door. And that was her place. So it was that idea. We talked even back, I think, in the first episode about liminal spaces and women standing in these or lying in these spaces between, in the case of poor Lilius AD, the sea and the land, and in the case of Mary, the world of women inside and the world of men outside. Now, Mary, we know, was exiled at some point in her life. She was sent to Scarba, which is a little island across the Gulf of Corryvreckan from Jura. And we know that because she made a song about it. And we think that she'd had a fallout with her chief. And we think it was perhaps because she was already in a slightly precarious position as a woman making the sort of poetry that the clan poets made. She would make criticism of the chief because the poets also, you know, they had quite high status. The chief wasn't above criticism. And we think perhaps she overpraised a cousin of her chief, of whom she was greatly fond. She was a great fan. But then there is a really curious little tradition that she was buried face down under stones. Now, we know about being buried face down under stones because Lilius AD was buried face down under stones. It's the Norse tradition of burying a witch, or a Norse tradition of burying a witch. And oddly, there's a similar tradition that the same burial was afforded to Mairead Nian Lachlan, who was a poetess, a poet in Mull. We think they were probably non-conforming. It's quite interesting how short a step there is between the sort of thumbscrews and pillywinks and other things they used for deaving witches, torturing witches, and the sort of idea of the scold's bridle for a woman who, you know, was too free with her tongue. And in a sense, I think there's a sort of perhaps a feeling that Maddy and Mairead were too free with their tongues. That's sort of the idea. And the story isn't about a witch. It's about someone who's sort of tainted in it, or at least the idea that those concepts didn't just cease to exist. And there's a thought experiment. A woman called Matilda Jocelyn Gage made kind of a comment that if you look at women's history, take away the word witch and replace it with woman, and it can do the same thing, really. That was the idea with the story. And also because she was from Rodal, if anybody's been to Rodal, to St Clement's Church there, there's some really fascinating lewd carvings. There's a woman above the door and you can see a very obvious kind of cleft between her legs. She's sitting with her legs akimbo. She's called a Sheila na Gig, and they're kind of these exhibitionist female carvings that are generally showing their privates off. They're generally kind of more grotesque than the one at Rodal. She's kind of more naturalistic almost, but she's quite weathered away. And there's a man who was known as Seamus Vuch, so James of the Willy, literally. But somebody shot off his willy back in the day, because obviously times change. It was a sort of Victorian lady asked her gilly to shoot off the willy, which is quite funny. But Maddy is interested in the story. She's interested in the Sheila na Gig, and she thinks of her sort of, you know, embedded in the wall in the way that she was stuck in the door.
I was fond of riddles and conundrums as a child, and my father delighted in sharing the many he knew. The first I ever solved for myself was the riddle of the door. Neither outside nor inside, but every house that is a house must have one. Once I had solved it, of course I posed it to anyone who would listen, and I have taught it to dozens of children in my care. Perhaps it is apt that I love that riddle so well, since many of my country folk have come to say that the doorway was my place, the spot where I could stand and make my poems. I am supposed to have claimed so myself, to outwit a judgment of my chief. He is said to have decreed that a woman, a nursemaid no less, had no business making songs in praise of chief and clan, but instead should compose ditties for the nursery or laments for lost love. In this way, I might pass my time while I darned his children's stockings, or help keep the rhythm as the woman pounded the walking board. It is the role of men to compose poetry for the great world outside, you see, to inspire valour in battle, or melt the resolve of an army in the heat of the poet's scorn. In this version of events, I am a creature in between. A woman making men's poetry, and so, the story goes, I took up position on that threshold, the better to make songs that had no place inside among the women or out among the men. My chief is supposed to have responded by exiling me for my pains. I claimed no such thing in truth, and he passed no such judgment, but I do not mind the stories. For in many ways, am I not a creature of the spaces in between? Born in one island, but passing my life in another, my heart forever reaching north and west across that great expanse of sea. A MacLeod through my father's people and a MacDonald through my mother. I serve the greatest branch of my father's clan, while the ties of kinship and plain good sense bound me more closely to another. And does a nursemaid herself not stand on a threshold of sorts? She ushers children into adulthood, of course, but often, too, she stands in the shadow death would cast over childbed and cradle. I have nursed 5 Lairds of MacLeod and 2 of Applecross and lost not one of them, but I have wrapped over small souls in linen, bound not for fosterage in some great house, but for a colder lodging in the grave.
So a woman celebrated for her poetry by her clan chief, but ultimately said too much.
Tolerated, maybe more than celebrated.
Okay. Yeah.
I think, you know, this is a period in which Gaelic society is flourishing. So in that era, you have an Glas or Dowell who'll be in Dunvegan, the blind harper, Roderick MacLeod, I think his name was, he was from Lewis. And, you know, you've got these great moments in Gaelic art, the Macrimmon Pipers. And, you know, if you visit Dunvegan, you see the paintings. It's a really kind of rich period of Gaelic culture. But she didn't fit. She definitely didn't fit. Often if you look at the named female poets of Gaeldom, they're generally aristocratic. People like Sheila na Cepich. We don't really know what Sheila is in English, but Julia MacDonald of Cepich is how she's often known. Or they're writing religious poetry. So obviously that maybe gets them a bit of an out. They're not generally writing this kind of poetry that holds the clan chief to account. Less Malcolm Tucker kind of stuff.
Sir Roderick's children survived the nursery and my care, but still his son did not outlive him. Perhaps this helped make up his mind to send me into exile, for what man can entirely hold his reason when his children go to their graves before him? He was sad and I was fiery and took pride in the power of my words and my wit. I confess I did not always spare him the sharp side of my tongue. I was his kinswoman after all, and I thought to help him see the occasional error of his ways. I saw my means to do so in the example of his great cousin in Burnery, and I made many songs that sought to inspire him to follow in Sir Norman's footsteps. As I might have known, Sir Roderick was not minded to have his kinswoman bard lecture him in this way, not least since he thought himself the greater MacLeod. Before I knew it, I was on board a galley sailing for Mull, on to Jura and finally to the smallest and roughest prison of all, across the great whirlpool of Corryvreckan to the scrap of an island they call Scarabba. My anger churned for a time, but word of his death rent my heart regardless. When his brother Ian Breach succeeded him and recalled me to Dunvegan, I carried with me a fine lament for Roderick, and with it I took my place again in that glorious household. The great Macrimmon Pipers flourished, a fool capered, and I made my song alongside the great blind harper bard from the Isle of Lewis. I dwelled in favour in that place then, and I ensured my fires were banked so that my words should never flare up and burn me again.
I'm
this is the only track where we use a traditional song rather than taking the lyrics from yourself, you know, your stories, Mary, or elsewhere. We just use this kind of excerpt of a song by Mary Ní and Alistair Ruach herself, which is her song Mochragal Boch. It's actually the melody of which, Lauren, you recorded on your album.
Yeah, I recorded the melody of this a couple of years back on an album called Landskine that was largely slow airs. And the melody of this song is one of the darkest melodies of any Gaelic song I've really kind of ever come across. And it sits so well on the fiddle. It's really, really beautiful. But the translation of some of the words as well really struck me. I think you've got the literal translation there, Rachel, but the eyelashes thing really was such powerful imagery.
One of the verses goes, "It is thinking of you that has tortured my body and wasted the lashes from my eyes."
I've cried so much that she's lost all her eyelashes. They did have mourning rituals that, in a way, when you read the poetry of that era, you know, there's a lot about tearing hair. I remember when I was at uni and I wrote an essay, because I realised there's also this really weird image that comes up quite often of actually pulling grass out of the ground. And I think it's presumably older rituals of sort of self-wounding, turning into these hair-pulling things and then turning into this pulling up of grass, that tearing. It's fascinating. They had blood-drinking motifs as well. If you think about, there's a Gaelic song that's very famous called Grigal Cria, the lament for Gregor MacGregor of Glen Strae, and his wife talks about drinking his blood after her father chopped off his head. Where did you first come across it? It's not a melody I know at all, Lauren. Where did you find it first?
It was actually Deirdre, who's reading the story for us in this podcast, that kind of geared me towards the tune. I'd heard it years previous, sung by Willie Matheson in the School of Scottish Studies recording.
When I went to sort of learn the song and was finding versions online, I took a lot from Rachel Walker's version. So thanks to Rachel.
But yeah, Deirdre, I went to her saying I was looking for this song in quite a specific meter and with a certain darkness that I really kind of needed for this section in the album. And yeah, I'm glad I asked her, and it's kind of come full circle now that she's reading this story for us.
I am old now, but my fire's gone out. I am too infirm to be of use in the nursery at Dunvegan or anywhere else, and so I have returned to Harris, to Rodal, where I began. I wake in the morning light of heart, and when I have leisure and strength I walk, once again coming to know this land of my fathers and my father's fathers back to the time of Pharaoh. I have visited the old church many times, and I find it peaceful to walk among so many of my kindred, resting quiet in their graves. The great chieftain Alistair Crochtoch lies inside the nave in a strange archway carved with angels, priests of the old times in their odd robes and hats and pictures of hunting and sailing. There is a castle that must be Dunvegan, but having spent my life there, I can only conclude the mason had never seen it. Alistair is carved in full armour, as is his son William, but their effigies interest me less than the woman carved outside in the east wall of the tower. I know not quite what to make of her. She holds a small creature and what I think may be a flag. She sits with her thighs apart and there is a clash between her legs clear to see. Used as I am to attending at childbeds, when I first saw her, I thought her a woman newly delivered of a child. But then I wondered why such a thing would be carved into a church, even in the times of old churchmen and their heresies. Peering harder, I'm not even sure it is a babe she cradles. It looks more like a dog or perhaps a lamb. I asked a cousin who has always lived here what she was made to tell us, but he says the old beliefs and old ways must be ashes in our memories now, and he can no longer say. It tickles me, though, to see that woman. I cannot decide whether she is the opposite of me, keeping guard outside in the air and wind, while the dead chieftain slumber in the darkness indoors. Or perhaps she is like me instead, in the story where I compose my work in the doorway, neither inside nor out. Set into the walls, she too occupies a place between. I will lie in the graveyard here when my own time is over, and it pleases me that she will watch over me, my eternal sister inside the stones.
Been listening to the Heal and Harrow podcast, produced by us, Heal and Harrow, and recorded and edited by Grant Anderson. All the music you heard is from our self-titled album. With thanks to Mary Kidd and Deirdre Graham.
You can buy our album, a copy of Mary's book We Are All Witches, and hear the stories in full by visiting healandharrow.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe so you won't miss an episode. Bye for now.